This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Hello to all you listeners as godless as the original Gettysburg Address, and welcome to Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. This is the November 23rd, 2013 broadcast of Free Thought Radio. The show is broadcast from Madison, Wisconsin. We produce the show here. Our engineer, Dave McCann, engineers and produces. And if you want to hear it live through your iPhone or other device, you can hear it streamed through iHeartRadio all across the nation. We also broadcast on some individual stations in California, the Monterey area, in New York State, around Ithaca area, in the state of Michigan, the state of Missouri, and in central Texas.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of FFRF. That stands for the Freedom From Religion Foundation, because we know there can be no true freedom of religion without the freedom to dissent. And freedom from religion is as constitutional a concept as freedom of religion. We have almost 20,000 members nationwide and in all of the provinces in Canada as well, in every state, in every province of Canada, and we work for separation of church and state.
Tomorrow's the birthday of Scott Joplin. He was born November the 24th, 1868. Scott Joplin, the king of ragtime, was a non-believer, and you're going to hear some of his music between segments on today's show. Today, we're going to talk with Stuart Wilson. He's an investigative reporter from North Carolina. We're going to talk about the IRS housing allowance lawsuit that the Freedom From Religion Foundation is taking, but specifically about some pastors that he has discovered who are abusing the law.
Stuart Wilson is a really impressive investigative TV reporter, and he's uncovered some, shall we say, questionable financial practices by preachers, including a huge megachurch pastor in North Carolina. Now, before we talk about the godless Gettysburg Address and pay a little homage to the secular views of JFK, Dan, you just came back from Mexico.
Bienvenidos a nuestros amigos en México, nuestros amigos ateos. I was just down in Mexico City this last weekend for the Mexican Atheist conference that they had and a dinner that they had. Gerardo and Tanya are some of the leaders, and Diana and Diana. And Gerardo and Tanya are expecting a little girl in a few weeks, so I hope that all goes well. And my new friends, Grisha and Erica and Johan, took me to the top of the Sun Pyramid out in Teotihuacan, north of Mexico City, and that was an amazing experience, just getting up to the top and seeing the Sun Pyramid and the Mood Pyramid. And I didn't see any Aztec or Mayan gods up there, but
hopefully any
sacrificial.
Yeah.
But it was pretty amazing to think about human history and the ideals and the dreams of humanity that we still live today with the same impulse to live a meaningful life. So thank you, all you Mexican atheists. They're a small group. They're struggling, and so they're hoping to attract more attention for free thought in the country of Mexico,
which is very much needed. Now, at the beginning of today's show, you heard part of the Gettysburg Address, and this was recited by President Obama. Can we hear that again?
The nation shall have a new birth of freedom.
So, if you didn't notice, certainly Fox TV and the religious right is having a fit that Obama recited the original Gettysburg Address as written in his own hand by Lincoln. And he was asked to do so by Ken Burns, who was doing a documentary. And so this past week has marked the sesquicentennial of the Gettysburg Address.
Well, what was different about it? Why did he say it wrong?
Well, there's no, when you say the nation shall have a new birth of freedom. Most of us have learned that. Many of us were required to memorize it in school as the nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom. So President Obama recited the Nicolay version, which is the one that Lincoln himself wrote by hand. He probably started it in the Washington, D.C., because it's on White House stationery, or Executive Mansion stationery, as they called it at the time. And then the second page is on foolscap, as if he wasn't quite happy with it, and he finished it when he was about ready to give the address to at Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, on the National Cemetery. And people have always remarked, historians have remarked, how brief this is. It's less than 2 minutes. But it's even briefer, the way he wrote it. It's minus the words under God. And can we hear the whole Gettysburg Address?
67 years ago, our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of it as a final resting place for those who died here, that the nation might live. This we may, in all propriety, do. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here have hallowed it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, while it can never forget what they did here. It is rather for us, the living, we here be dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they here gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve these dead shall not have died in vain. That the nation shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
So, this was the first version. This is in the Library of Congress. You can find it online. The second version is called the Hayes version, because when Lincoln got back to D.C. after giving the speech, he gave it to his secretary, John Hay, as soon as he got back from Gettysburg. And the second version is as godless as the first. Now, it may be that Lincoln ad-libbed when he gave the speech.
Well, three reporters say
that
he did.
There are some reporters that said he did, but it's not. The jury is out on that.
But it's contradictory. One nation under God by we the people. Mm-hmm. It's like, whose nation is this?
So then Lincoln was asked to copy out three official versions, all for charitable purposes and military purposes. And these remaining three versions in his hand, the words under God are included. We assume he was asked to do that. And that's the widely replicated version you hear and what's inscribed on the wall of the Lincoln Memorial. But it's very interesting that the first two versions, the version that he read from, are godless.
And why should it matter? We are a godless nation. So, regardless of the personal beliefs of our presidents, they should not be mixing religion and government. President John F. Kennedy, who was a believing Catholic, agreed.
Now, of course, yesterday was the 50th anniversary of the assassination. And Dan, do you remember where you were when you learned JFK had been shot?
Lincoln Junior High School.
Lincoln.
I was in the ninth grade. In Anaheim, California, we all had to go out into the playground and listen to the announcement over the loudspeakers from our principal that our president had been shot.
Well, I was in second grade, you cradle robber, you. And I think I was very confused, but, you know, we were sent home early, and that's how it sunk in. And so what I find very comforting is to listen to that famous speech by JFK to the ministers, the Protestants in Houston, when he was campaigning in 1960. And we have a line from that in FFRF's 30-second commercial spot.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at FFRF.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers.
So, Dan, you did that very pretty music underneath that, and that's our announcer, Buzz Kemper, announcing that spot.
An America where the complete separation of church and state.
So now we're hearing a little bit of the Maple Leaf Rag, since we're celebrating freethinker Scott Joplin's birthday. And who's our guest going to be?
We're going to talk with Stuart Wilson, a TV investigative journalist, who has uncovered some facts, some financial facts, about some of these megachurch pastors who are abusing the parsonage or housing allowance.
And then we're going to fire up that war on Christmas, quote unquote. I'm being tongue-in-cheek. So stay tuned for Free Thought Radio.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and coming up, we'll be talking with North Carolina TV investigative reporter Stuart Wilson out of Charlotte, talking about excesses of mega preachers and abuses of the so-called parish exemption. But now we plan to be in Chicago next Tuesday, Dan, to join our Metropolitan Chicago chapter in putting up a very unique display. And this is on Daly Plaza, where they've had litigation over a nativity scene for many years. And now they declared it a public forum, and this large creche, menorah, other religious things are up there every year. And we've had a lot of complaints about it. And finally, we've come up with some pretty nifty ideas. And maybe you want to talk about the 8.5 foot tall lit giant red A.
Well, I've only seen a drawing of it, so I haven't actually seen it, but it's going to be a huge, you know, the big, Richard Dawkins Foundation, the atheist A, is going to stand one whole story tall, 8.5 feet tall.
And of course, everywhere you go, you place that, it's in a lapel pin.
Yeah, I have it as a lapel pin. Somebody on the airplane said, "Oh, are you an Atlanta fan?" And I said, "This A is for atheists." And she said, "Oh, so we're going to see that A, though, huge in Daly Plaza."
And Richard Dawkins is always very gracious. He knows about this, and he's given permission and generally gives permission for that.
So it's going to be mounted firmly with lights?
Yeah, it's made by one of the major firms that makes light displays. And then underneath it is going to be an eight-foot-wide banner. And this banner was designed by Tom Cara and the others in the Chicago chapter, and by, I've forgotten the name of the artist, but it's very clever because it's celebrating the birth of the Bill of Rights. So it's really quite irreverent because there's a manger scene, and it's, I think, Benjamin Franklin, James Madison, Thomas Jefferson, and the Statue of Liberty looking on reverently at a manger.
Adoring the baby.
Adoring the Bill of Rights in a manger. It's really cute. And then the wording Tom Cara came up with, it says, "Happy Winter Solstice from the FFRF Metropolitan Chicago chapter. At this season of the winter solstice, we celebrate the birth of the unconquered sun, the true reason for the season. As Americans, let us also honor the birth of our Bill of Rights, which reminds us there can be no freedom of religion without having freedom from religion." So that is going to be on the banner. It also has, of course, FFRF's name and our website. This is a joint venture by FFRF and our Chicago chapter.
And how long will it be up?
Through the month of, we hope.
All through
December? The month of December. And so we're going to put it up on Tuesday morning. And Dan, you and I are planning to be there too. And so that's kind of exciting. And also in Illinois, in December, we'll be going up our traditional winter solstice sign. And that wording is written by Ann Gaylor.
At the Capitol, right? In Springfield.
In the Capitol in Springfield. And that says, "At the season of the winter solstice, may reason prevail. There are no gods, no devils, no angels, no heaven, no hell. There is only our natural world. Religion is but myth and superstition that hardens hearts and enslaves minds." And we also have that going up for, I think it's the 16th year in a row. I have to look that up. In the Wisconsin State Capitol here in Madison, Wisconsin. That would be going up on December 2nd. I think that's the first Monday of December. And so
So it's a double dose of free thought in Lincoln's state of Illinois this
yeah,
December.
Speaking of Lincoln. And speaking of the winter solstice, our clever editor, Bill Dunn, who edits Free Thought Today, FFRF's newspaper, wrote a press release at my request, and he titled it, "Time to Fire Up War on Christmas Again," war on Christmas in quotes, so he's being facetious.
Because we're not starting the war, yeah.
And he said, "Want to fire a volley in the skeptics' annual war on Christmas while supporting FFRF's work in shoring up the state church wall of separation." And we are inviting people to go to FFRF's gift store at fff.org/shop to purchase not only your gifts and books to enlighten the world, but our winter solstice cards. And we have, I think, over a dozen choices. And they're very interesting and clever. We have the new Keep Saturn in Saturnalia.
So instead of a Christmas card, you could send a winter solstice.
Yes, you send a greeting at the end of the year. Some of them say Happy New Year, and some of them say Merry Winter Solstice and things like that.
Keep Saturn in Saturnalia.
Yeah,
that's
and,
cute.
Yeah, that's cute because of the history that, of course, the winter solstice was celebrated for millennia. And in Rome, ancient Rome, they called it Saturnalia, and it was quite a festival. And we also have another irreverent card with a Santa, "Yes, Virginia, there is no God." That's drawn by cartoonist Steve Benson and was censored when we tried to put that up a couple of places on billboards.
Ooh, in Las Vegas. So
although it ran on buses in Seattle. We have a favorite, a bestseller, is the Mad Bluebird. It's a photograph, and it just says winter inside. It says, "Winter's for the birds, but have a merry winter solstice and happy new year." We have Reasons Greetings card. We have pretty pictures, everything you can imagine. So you can stay in touch with friends and relatives without having religion.
And there's this one, it's like a package wrapped up that says...
Well, Heathen's Greetings we're out of, but we have a Heathen's Greetings non-tract, the real meaning of the season that you can order to include in your cards. And it gives the whole spiel about the real reason for the season being the winter solstice, the shortest, darkest day of the year, traditionally hitting December 21st or 22nd. And in order to celebrate that here in Madison, Wisconsin, FFRF traditionally or untraditionally has an event at the state capitol because that is filled with religion as a public forum in the month of December. So we do have planned for this year a concert by you, Dan, and we think we can have cookies. I'm waiting to hear back. And we're going to have a Second Harvest food bin so people can donate. It's a great deal of need this year because we see food stamps being cut off.
On what day will this be?
This will be on Monday, December 15th at noon to 1 in the Wisconsin State Capitol. First floor, which means it's the second floor. It's up above the ground floor on the rotunda. And we will have our winter solstice sign at the Capitol. And we will also have our non-nativity display that was really put together by our attorney, Andrew Seidel. It's very whimsical. It's got a little, we're adoring a little black baby and celebrating the rebirth of the sun with Thomas Jefferson and Einstein and the Statue of Liberty. And
and it gets a lot more attention than the Christian nativity scene, which is boring. People are coming over, little kids are coming over to look at the little doll and to look at all the little drawings and the astronaut instead of an angel. So come to the Capitol during December to see that.
Yeah, and we'll have a little more update about whether we can have cookies or not. You have always been able to.
And if you're looking for solstice gifts this year?
Well, I would suggest your new album for FFRF, your new CD, Adrift on a Star, which came out, did not come out in time for gifts last year. And it has the showpiece, Poor Little Me, which is your collaboration with Broadway icon Charles Strauss, famous for Annie, Bye Bye Birdie. Beautiful music and beautiful words by you, Dan.
And if you want an actual solstice song on the Friendly Neighborhood Atheist CD, we have three CDs. On that is the song called Solstice Tribute, which is honoring the real reason for the season.
And it's a rewrite of O Little Town of Bethlehem.
It has the words, "O ancient drums, stop beating and superstitions fall. It's time for reason's greetings, for peace, goodwill to all."
So now we are listening to some more Scott Joplin in honor of the birthday of this non-religious and a composer who wasn't very well treated in his lifetime, but is very well remembered today. And we are going to be talking with Stuart Wilson, investigative reporter for an NBC station in Charlotte, North Carolina. He's uncovered some amazingly egregious abuses by mega preachers of the parish exemption or simply questionable practices that you will want to know about.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we have on the phone with us from North Carolina, Stuart Watson. He's an investigative reporter at WCNC in Charlotte, North Carolina. And he's been doing some research on the IRS housing allowance, which is a lawsuit that the Freedom From Religion Foundation is now taking, challenging this special exclusion of housing money that ministers of the gospel get to take. But in his investigation, he's also uncovered some, I guess we could say, financial questions about some local pastors and other pastors who appear to be abusing the law. Before we talk with Stuart, let's just set it up with a clip from one of the stories he ran. It was like an 8-minute segment, and this is just about 90 seconds of one of three investigative reports Stuart Watson has produced so far on this issue.
This is the story of the House of Stephen.
Let's be a generation known for what we stand for. Let's be a generation known for what we love.
In the beginning, Stephen Furtick created Elevation Church.
He's a rock and roll star.
His followers are called elevators. These elevators only went up. From 14 people to 14,000 in less than 8 years.
Good morning, guys. Welcome.
With even bigger plans for the future.
The Lord's going to enable us to be one of the first churches in the United States to have 100,000 people.
He's one part preacher, one part celebrity.
Stephen Furtick!
Headlining all over the world.
Don't you ever let anyone talk you out of what God put in you.
Stephen Furtick is his own brand, profiting from book sales and paid personal appearances around the world.
So the pastor keeps making more money and more money and more money.
Now Stephen Furtick is spending a lot of that money on a 16,000 square foot house. It has 7.5 bathrooms. Building permits put the contract value of the house alone just shy of $1.4 million. The land cost another $325,000 for a total cost of more than $1.7 million.
So, Stuart Watson, who produced that, welcome to Free Thought Radio.
Thanks, Annie Laurie.
Now, we kind of left that hanging because it goes on for another, 7 minutes.
And that's just one of three segments you did. So
let's talk about this pastor that you've been researching and why you felt that it needed some investigation.
Well, it's not... Everybody thought it was just a story about one pastor and his big house. And actually, it's a story about, in my mind, about a tax-exempt organization of a very particular type. If you're a what they call a 501c3 organization, which is a portion of the tax code, it means that certain parts of your organization are tax-exempt. But typically, those organizations, everyone from the Red Cross or the United Way to huge public hospitals, they are exempt from certain taxes, but they also are more or less transparent. They are required to file their IRS Form 990 online. You can see how they're governed. You can see how the executives are paid. You can see what portion of their income is sheltered from taxes. However, when you come to churches and religious organizations, they are not required to file the IRS 990. They're not required to make that tax document public. You don't know how much money is brought in and how much money is paid out. Now, typically, churches and a lot of religious institutions voluntarily will disclose that because they're soliciting donations more or less from the public. They're soliciting donations from believers, people who believe in their cause, whether they believe in God or not, they believe in that particular cause. But in the case of these big mega churches and also some small churches, they elect not to disclose this. And so it's more or less a black box. Unless they show you an audited financial statement, you don't know how much money is coming out. The accountants or some sort of independent auditor is not telling you how much money came in and how much money was paid out. And so this comes to light not when you have a little bitty religious institution, but when you have a really big one. And all of a sudden there are these conspicuous purchases, a conspicuous consumption, like building a 16,000-square-foot home, that investigative reporters like myself go, wait a minute, where did that money come from? And all of a sudden you realize just how little you know and how little accountability there is for the use of this tax-exempt status.
Did you ask
That's what starts.
Did you ask the church how much money they're taking in and spending?
Repeatedly, yeah.
What did they tell you?
They said, take a look at our annual report. Well, the annual report is a very slick, colorful, lots of graphs and charts and pretty pictures, but it's not audited, and it does not account for all the money. And if you look at the money that's reported in the annual report, it doesn't even add up, like the money that they give to outside mission work or to other tax-exempt organizations. The total dollar figure and the amount that's itemized, they don't add up. This is not an audited financial statement. It's not a document which is accountable for all the money that is raised or spent. And most notably, it does not tell you what the pastor makes or how much is given for his housing allowance.
So when we're talking about this particular pastor in your part of the country, Stephen Fertig.
The elevator pastor.
Who's going to be building this $1.4 million home, is building it. Am I remembering correctly that the land isn't under his own name?
Right. He and one of his mentors have placed this land and home in a trust, and his spokesperson said he did that for privacy and for security reasons. But it also means that you wouldn't know about it by looking through the public tax records unless you knew that the address that all this went to is the address of the church, of the home office of the church, and that the person who is the trustee is a lead pastor, is essentially the chief financial officer for this massive church.
So it is a very puzzling situation.
Yeah.
Well, it's secretive.
And why wouldn't they want to be accountable? You know, you can go online right now, and maybe you have, Stuart, you can go online right now and see my salary. You can see the Freedom From Religion Foundation's every single penny that comes in and every single penny that's spent. We are accountable. And
well, we fill out the Form 990 as all 501c3 organizations do, except for church denominations. And the tax code specifically exempts them, and that's one of our three federal lawsuits against the IRS, by the way. We have a lawsuit against the parish exemption, we have a lawsuit against the Form 990 discrimination, and also one against the IRS for failure to enforce its anti-church politicking code. So a lot of that tax-free money could be used for politics.
So, Stuart, I know you're investigating a lot of different, not just this one elevator church. Maybe his salary is being elevated, but I noticed that when he got wind, this pastor Stephen got wind of your investigation, he kind of went bananas. Listen to something that he said about your investigation.
So I've been feeling sorry for myself lately because they told me this news reporter is trying to do this story where he wants to make our church look bad. Well, me and Holly, this year, we're building a house. We've been looking for a piece of land to build a house for our family for a long time. But then I found out, this is crazy, the news tried to fly this chopper over our house. I'm thinking to myself, it's not that great of a house. I mean, I'm sure there's better houses if you just got to fly a chopper over somebody's house. But it started to mess with me a little bit. Now, this ain't right because I didn't even build that house with money from the church. I built it with money from my books, and I gave money to the church from the books. And you start getting real defensive and being like, this ain't right. This ain't right.
Well, he really sounds nervous, doesn't he?
Well, he got a lot less defensive after the report. He kind of changed his tone, but we flew a helicopter over the house because you can't see the house from the street. There's just a series of no trespassing signs, and I don't believe in violating the law, so we didn't trespass on his property. We flew over the house while it was under construction, and the public statement that he made about paying for the house with revenue from his books, actually, that became a bigger story than the purchase of the house itself, because the books are published by a big for-profit publisher. They're published by a division of one of the big publishing houses. And the money from the books goes to him, and yet the book is promoted widely by the nonprofit tax-exempt church. And so you can't see how much of the nonprofit's money, how much of the donations given to the church, goes to promote his for-profit venture. And you also can't see how much money he made off the sale of the books. And so the notion that the for-profit and the nonprofit are all commingled, they're all wrapped up together, that raises a great many questions about, well, wait a minute, when you're up in the pulpit pushing your book, is that work you're doing for your for-profit business, or are you doing that as part of the nonprofit mission? And that's what raises a tremendous number of questions about the use of your nonprofit tax-exempt status to promote and further a for-profit venture which benefits this one lead pastor who's essentially the boss of the whole church.
So there's no way to know how much money's coming or going, and when the church pays the salary, doesn't the church file like a W-2 form to the pastor? Yeah,
they do. Yes, sir. But that's not public. And also, the way in which he is paid comes from multiple revenue streams. In other words, he has his own career as a kind of motivational speaker, for which he is paid handsomely to fly to Australia or to Dallas, Texas, or to London, England, and speak. Well, the church is not paid for that. Stephen Furtick is paid for that directly. So he has a revenue stream, a quite lucrative revenue stream, by flying all over the world and speaking. And during those speeches, he promotes his book. He encourages people to buy his book. That's another revenue stream. And so there are a great many revenue streams which are facilitated by the church, the nonprofit religious institution, the tax-exempt platform, which serves to launch his for-profit career. And that's that nexus, that connection between the nonprofit church and the for-profit ventures is what raises so many questions, because it's in a black box. You don't know what it is.
So getting back to this whole housing allowance, this idea that we'll get back to the housing allowance, because you've uncovered another questionable practice in your area by another clergyman. We're going to talk about the parish exemption, the housing allowance uniquely given to ministers of the gospel, with investigative reporter Stuart Watson, who is with WCNC Charlotte. I'm Annie Laurie Gellar.
I'm Dan Barker. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gellar, and we have on the phone with us Stuart Watson, who's an investigative reporter from Charlotte, North Carolina, and that's NBC station WCNC. And you've been reporting about a megachurch, but you also have a story underway, I believe, about an ordained minister who works for a secular charity who is claiming the housing allowance. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Right. I actually reported about this. He's an ordained Methodist minister 17 years ago when I worked in Raleigh, our state capital. And he works for a 501c3 charity for one of the nonprofits tax exempt. But a big portion of his salary, at the time it was $50,000, was paid as a housing allowance. And, you know, this is a parsonage allowance. This is tax exempt, or rather, as Dan corrected me yesterday, it's a tax exclusion. They don't even have to report it. So this is like $50,000 in cash given to this man. Well, in the intervening 17 years since I first reported on that, I've moved over to Charlotte, and the amount of tax-exempt income for this one individual has tripled from $50,000 for the parsonage allowance to almost $150,000 or $147,000 for, largely for the housing allowance.
And that's not his whole salary, right?
No. He and his wife together earn almost $800,000 running the 501c3, running the nonprofit.
Well,
the key here is that he's not functioning as a minister. He is not functioning as a Methodist minister. He's functioning as chief executive officer of a nonprofit.
And so the question I have, and actually I've contacted our attorney about that. My understanding is that the 1954 law passed by Congress creating this parish exemption or broadening it,
exclusion
did not encompass this, what you're describing. But I'm wondering if it's happening everywhere. That,
well, not being a lawyer, I don't know. I don't know the legalities of this, but it's certainly questionable to take an exemption which was written into the law based on a religious exemption, and then when you're not working or even functioning in a religious environment, to continue to take the exemption.
Yeah,
that's the question that I have about this.
And it would also have an impact on the secular charity that was paying someone with a housing allowance, claiming it even though the law doesn't encompass it.
Correct. They can essentially pay a higher salary because they're paying a tax exempt or a tax excluded. This is pre-tax money.
Well, I don't see how they could pay that couple a higher salary if you're talking about $800,000.
I'm beginning to think we're underpaid here.
Charity begins at home must be their motto.
Huh.
Well, it's... there have been a lot of questions raised about their salary.
So certainly. I'm still an ordained minister, actually. I have an ordination, even though I'm an atheist now. So if I go to work anywhere, could I say, hey, I was ordained, I'm going to just exclude my housing, my rent, my house payments? That doesn't seem right.
It doesn't. It seems questionable. It seems like an abuse of the privilege or abuse of the exemption, and that's why we're reporting about it. That's why we're raising questions about it.
Yeah, and I think that's why you made contact with us. And, of course, our position is that we think the housing allowance, even as intended to benefit ministers who are actually working for churches and doing sacerdotal duties,
With no abuses
is still an abuse of the Constitution. We don't think that privilege is correct. I realize that's sort of beyond the scope of what you're reporting, Stuart. But
I think there are two things. One is people who have abused the privilege, and then the second question is the constitutional question, which you have raised, and that is, should the privilege exist at all? Is the privilege constitutional?
But these abuses that you're uncovering, I think, should concern all taxpayers. We all pay so much more because they pay so much less.
Even within the Christian church and within the evangelical movement, there are people who are basically saying, you're making us look bad. You're giving ammunition to the atheists and the agnostics when they try to challenge the entire privilege. So there are people within the church who certainly question the abuse of the privilege.
Now, Stuart, you also have talked about this issue that's come up, and I'm a little fuzzy about the law, where ministers own more than one home, and we're not sure whether the housing allowance applies to both homes.
I don't think it does. But
that...
there was a case, and there is an answer to that, and I'm sorry to say I'm not there yet. There has been a case, and it has gone up on appeal about whether it's a second home. But I think what you can say is, no matter how big the home, as long as you can say the home would rent for X dollars, you can claim it. And so theoretically, there is no cap because it's only limited by what you could claim you could rent the home for.
So it depends on what neighborhood you live in, perhaps. But,
so
but you still don't need
the
to,
house is.
You don't need to live in two or three homes. You only need to live in one place.
So yeah. Pastor sure. Stephen Furtick, whom you've been investigating, is building this $1.4 million house on a 1.7 million dollar. Oh,
yes.
Sorry.
1.7 total.
1.7 total.
Yes. It's probably worth closer to 3 million, but yeah.
So you can imagine what he's going to be able to claim as a housing allowance because of the fair rental value. Well, we're out of time. We've been talking with Stuart Watson, investigative reporter in Charlotte. Thank you so much.
And
thank you, Dave McCann, for engineering and producing our show, and Buzz Kemper for announcing. Find out about Freethought Radio at ffrf.org/news/radio and how you can listen to our podcast.
Ask for more information at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021, and you can get a sample copy of our newspaper, Freethought Today, full of news about separation of church and state and what FFRF is doing to keep it intact. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Freethought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday.